There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're from Evo. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family and Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. We're going to be joined in segment number two by John Jansen. He does excellent work over at Fox Sports Philadelphia, the Gambler, and we're going to get his thoughts on what we've seen thus far this season from the Philadelphia Phillies, the NL East in general, what he's made out of the just absolute sinkitude of the Chicago White Sox, and then we're going to dive into a few games for Wednesday with him in the final segment. Going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Wednesday as we do touch them all. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter /X timeline at GNN_D1. Keep in mind, Lurzium, naming does not matter. So, as per usual, please just send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you are able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Did not get in any Twitter /X questions today, but we had a fun day of baseball on Tuesday. Let's take a look back at it. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
It's not often that in a Patrick Corbin start, the Nationals lose and the bright spot is Patrick Corbin, but that turned out to be the case on Tuesday as for the LA Dodgers, they find a way to be able to get the job done by a count of 4-1 as Corbin was relatively solid in this one for Patrick Corbin. Goes out there, slings 5 1/3 innings scoreless. From there, you did have Derek Vaughn give you not out of the bullpen, but gave up a run along the way, but it was Hunter Harvey who gave up 2 runs in an inning, and then Matt Barnes, he allows a home run in his inning of work, going deep for the LA Dodgers. Shohei Ohtani, his 6th home run of the campaign. You also were able to get an inning out of the bullpen scoreless out of Jordan Weems and out from Jacob Barnes as well, but for the Washington Nationals, just not a lot doing with regards to the bats. They actually go 3 of 9 with men in scoring position and muster 1 run because they left 11 men on base for James Paxton. A lot of traffic on the base paths, but escapes with just 1 run allowed in 4 2/3 innings. From there, Alex Vesia, 4 outs out of the bullpen scoreless. Danny Hudson, Evan Phillips, Michael Grove, they all come in. They lend a scoreless inning. All the relievers, by the way, through 16 plus pitches, but found a way to be able to get the job done out there. The Milwaukee Brewers have been one of your top over teams in baseball this season, but bats appear to be cooling down. 2-1, they fall to the Pittsburgh Pirates, and it has been a Brewers unit that, in general, has just had a little bit of a tough time getting offense generated recently. 2 runs or fewer for them, and now 5 out of their last 6 games, and for the Pittsburgh Pirates, they got a tremendous start here from Bailey Falter, giving up a solo home run over the course of 7 innings, going deep for the Brewers. Gary Sanchez, 2nd home run of the campaign, while the young gun was able to go out there and have himself a nice debut. Tobias Myers got called up to the big leagues to make his first career start, and he gave up a solo home run over the course of 5 innings. Andrew McCutchen, 1st inning, 1st batter he faced, got his 3rd home run of the campaign after giving up a leadoff homer. Didn't allow anything from there. Abner Uribe, 8 scoreless inning, and Jared Koenig, he gives up a run in 2 innings of work, but Brewers, just 3 hits in this one. And Colin Olderman, David Benar, they were both able to supply a scoreless inning of their own. Staying out there in the NL Central, our DK Network right to pick was the Reds on the money line, and this hits with ease. 8-1, they're able to get it done. As for the Philadelphia Phillies, 1 of 9 with men in scoring position, they squandered all scoring opportunities, but they really squandered this game in the field. 3 errors committed as, Christian Pache, Alec Bohm, Mondo Sosa, all not help out the cause of Christopher Sanchez. He's only able to go 3 innings, gives up 5 runs, but only one of which was earned. There was at the very minimum 5 outs given to the Reds in their 4th spot in the 3rd inning. Might have actually been 6, so that really hurt them. And for the Reds, you did have Eli De La Cruz go deep a little bit later on in this game. 7th home run in the campaign. That comes off of Junior Marte of the Marte Parte, who gives up 2 runs over the course of 2 innings. Ricardo Pinto, he would give up a solo home run as well, as Santiago Espinal takes him deep. 1st home run in the campaign. You did get a scoreless inning out of Matt Strom and Orion Kierking. Hopefully I said that correctly. And for the Reds, wasn't necessarily a lot of length from Andrew Abbott. He gives up 4 walks in 4 1/3 innings, but allows just 1 run, and then from there, bullpen takes hold. Emilio Pagan, Sam Moll, they both provide a scoreless inning. Fernando Cruz, pair of outs out of the bullpen, scoreless, and Buck Farmer, 2 scoreless innings. We'll talk a little bit more about the Phillies with John Jansen in the next segment, but not a relatively good start for them in that series, but overall, they are off to a 15-9 start for the season, so that's actually been relatively solid. This has been relatively solid as well, fading the Chicago White Sox. Looked like they might get their 4th win of the season, but it was denied by the Minnesota Twins. 6-5 the final for the Chicago White Sox. Eric Fetty was tremendous. 11 strikeouts, 1 run allowed in 6 innings, and then the schlubs out of the bullpen just completely lit this game on fire. Stephen Wilson gives up a home run to Byron Buxton in the 9th inning, his 1st home run in the campaign, then allows a walk-off hit to Alex Gerloff, gave up 2 runs while getting just 2 outs out of the bullpen. Michael Kopech, he gives up a home run in his inning of work to Trevor Larnach, his 2nd home run in the campaign, as Kopech gives up 2 runs in an inning, and then you had a run given up in an inning by Jordan Leisure, and leisurely, the White Sox did go 2-5 with men in scoring position, as they got to Pablo Lopez, who's been having a rough go of it. 3 runs surrendered in 4 innings, but the bullpen at his back. Jay Jackson gives up 1 run over the course of 2 innings. Steven Okert surrenders a run in his inning of work, but Cole Sands was able to supply a scoreless inning along Cody Funderburk. And for the White Sox, they were able to exceed their average of 2.1 runs per game by quite a bit of a margin, but still a loss. The Oakland A's have now covered the run line in 12 out of their last 16 games as an underdog. Didn't start well, and they don't get the job done, but they're able to recoup, and they're able to hang in there. 4-3, the final. As for the Oakland A's, you had a rough first inning from Paul Blackburn. He allows 4 runs in that first inning thanks to a Anthony Rizzo home run. Rizzo, his 2nd home run in the campaign, but comes down to be able to fill 6 innings, giving up those 4 runs. Austin Adams, TJ McFarland from there, both on the scoreless inning, and the A's got the deep ball going off of Marcus Stroman. Lawrence Butler, 2nd home run in the campaign. Shea Lingelaris is 5th, as for Stroman, he gives up 3 runs in 5 1/3 innings. From there, the Yankees bullpen went to work, though. Clay Holmes has yet to give up an earned run this season. He, Caleb Ferguson, Ron Mananacchio all supply a scoreless inning, and Dana Santana, a pair of outs out of the bullpen scoreless. So Yankees continue to be quite hot on the money line at 16-8, but the A's, they do get that run line in. For the Colorado Rockies, for the 2nd time in their last 8 games, they exceeded 2 runs. 7-4, they take down the San Diego Padres. For the Padres, not the start that they were looking for from Michael King. He was not looking like a king, more like a peasant, with 6 runs surrendered, 4 of which were earned in 3 2/3 innings. Was hurt by a pair of errors out there in the field from Rosario along with Jake Cronenworth. But for the Colorado Rockies, he did have Brandon Rogers take him deep for his 1st home run in the campaign. From there, the bullpen was fine. Stephen Kolick gives up a run in an inning. Adrian Modahone, 2 1/3 innings scoreless, and Tom Gosgrove, a scoreless inning of his own. And for the Colorado Rockies, you had Ryan Feltner give up 4 runs in 4 innings, but the bullpen had his back. Jalen Beeks, who you had to expect him to probably be the bulk guy tomorrow, which that's a bit of an issue. 3 scoreless innings, so he was able to hold down the 4th year. Justin Lawrence, along with Jake Bird, they were both able to lend a scoreless inning as well. For the Rockies, even though they win this game, they go just 4 of 18 with men in scoring position, and another team has been miserable at being able to put up runs. How about the St. Louis Cardinals? They do hit an over in this game, but not because of their own offensive prowess. They played 14 unders, 8 overs, and 2 pushes thus far this season. 14-1. The Arizona Diamondbacks completely smoke the St. Louis Cardinals. As for Tommy Henry, very good start. Allows a solo run over the course of 6 innings. Wilson Contreras in the 1st inning got his 3rd home run in the campaign. Past that, he allows nothing in the Logan Allen. 3 innings scoreless out of the bullpen to be able to earn the save. And for the Arizona Diamondbacks, 3 of home runs. Pavin Smith goes deep off of Zach Thompson, his 1st of the campaign. Thompson also allows one to Kevin Newman, his 1st of the season. And Steven Matz gave one up to Christian Walker for his 4th of the campaign. Steven Matz gives up 7 runs in 4 1/3 innings. Zach Thompson gives up 7 runs in 2 2/3 innings before you were able to get a pair of innings scoreless out of the bullpen from Nick Robertson. But for the St. Louis Cardinals, 0-6 of the men in scoring position, so that's not great to say the least. But who has been great at being a bit unders for you? The Seattle Mariners, 7 overs, 15 unders, and a push highest under rate in all baseball. And They find a way to be able to get the job done against the old Walker Texas Rangers. This by a count of 4-0 for Seattle. Julio Rodriguez. Ding dong, the witch is dead. He gets his first home run of the campaign, and Kyle Raleigh was also able to go deep for his sixth home run of the campaign. Dane Dunning gives up both of those, gives up 4 runs in total over the course of 4 1/3 innings. From there, the bullpen was fine. Jose Leclerc, Jordan Latz, along with Cole Wynn, all supply a scoreless inning. Jose Ureña, 1 2/3 innings scoreless, but for the Rangers, absolutely nothing doing in this game. Logan Gilbert was great. 6 2/3 innings scoreless, does allow 4 walks, but keeps the Rangers off the scoreboard. Gabe Spire, Andres Munoz, both allow nothing in their inning of work, and Ryan Stanek is able to give you an out of the bullpen scoreless as well. The Baltimore Orioles had Grayson Rodriguez get tagged, not something you see very often as they fall to the LA Angels by a count of 7-4. Angels were riding a 5-game losing streak entering in, and for Grayson Rodriguez, he had given up 3 earned runs or fewer in 16 straight starts, and he gets destroyed. 7 runs allowed in 4 1/3 innings, including a home run to Mike Trout, his 9th of the campaign. That's tied for the big league lead. From there, the bullpen was fine. You had Yoan Ramirez, he'll take combined for 3 scoreless innings. Keegan Aiken, he's able to give you a pair of outs out of the bullpen scoreless. And Gunnar Henderson, 7th home run in the campaign. That comes off of Matt Moore, who did not give you more in this one. Solo home run, give it up in that 3rd of an inning. Griffin Canning, not a bad start here. 3 runs surrendered in 5 innings. He's been struggling this year, so take it where you can get it. Carlos Aceves, Adam Simber, both supply a scoreless inning. And Luis Garcia, 5 outs out of the bullpen scoreless. So Angels are able to find a way to be able to get it done. And for the Orioles, top over team in all of baseball. 14 overs, 7 unders, and 2 pushes. Your next best over team, that would be the Cleveland Guardians. They did play an under on Tuesday, though, 4-1. They're able to take down the Boston Red Sox. Last time Tanner Houck faced off against the Guardians, he had that complete game shutout. Not bad here. He gives up 2 runs over the course of 6 innings. Problem was, he didn't have a lot of offense for this team, as it was home run number 2 of the campaign for Wyler Abreu, and that was the lone run that they got. He was able to belt that off of Ben Lively. It was great. 1 run surrendered in 6 1/3 innings. No walks. From there, Scott Barlow, pair of outs out of the bullpen scoreless. Hunter Gaddis, Emmanuel Clase, they both supply a scoreless inning, and then he did have Jose Ramirez get home run number 4 of the campaign. That comes off of Cam Boozer, as he gives up 2 runs over the course of an inning. Brandon Bernardino, scoreless inning, so that's an under, and that's a W for the Cleveland Guardians. This was also a W for the Atlanta Braves, who have been one of your top over teams as well. They're able to take it to the Miami Marlins by a count of 5-0. The Braves have played about 57% of their games to the over, and for the Miami Marlins, just nothing doing for them. Trevor Rogers, he gives up 5 runs, 3 of which were earned in 5 2/3 innings, including a home run to Adam Duvall. He was able to go deep for a 3-run shot, 2nd home run in the campaign. From there, the bullpen did their part. Scoreless inning from Declan Cronin, and 1 1/3 inning scoreless from Anthony Bender. But for the Miami Marlins, 3 total hits in this game. Max Fried, a complete game shutout, allows 3 hits, does not walk a soul. Very, very good outing there. And this was also a solid outing as the Detroit Tigers. They take down the Tampa Bay Rays by a count of 4-2 as for Kenta Maeda. He was really struggling entering into this one. North of a 70 ERA, 5 scoreless from him. From there, Alex Faedo does give up a home run, 2 runs in total over the course of 2 innings, as it was Isak Paredes getting his 6th home run in the campaign, but having his back was Alex Lang, Jason Foley. They both supply a scoreless inning. And for the Detroit Tigers, 3 home runs in this one. Riley Green is able to take Ryan Pepiot deep for his 4th home run in the campaign, then Colin Pouche deep for his 5th, and then Pouche gives one up to Marcan, his 5th home run in the campaign. As for Pepiot, relatively solid start here, gives up that home run over the course of 6 innings, only 4 strikeouts, but held down the 4th, and then Colin Pouche gives up 3 runs in an inning for a Rays bullpen currently in the bottom 5 in the big leagues with regards to ERA in the bullpen. Their bullpen has not been great, to say the least. Kevin Kelly, Phil Maton, they're both able to supply a scoreless inning of their own. The struggles of the Astros, boy, do they continue. Astros are now 7-17, and they fall to the Chicago Cubs by kind of 7-2. J.P. France, well, he wishes he was in France. He gives up 5 runs in 5 innings, including a pair of home runs, as Cody Bellinger took him deep, 5th home run in the campaign, though Bellinger did have to leave this game early due to a back issue. And then Mike Tauchman gets home run number 1 of the season off of France, and then he's able to get a home run off of Seth Martinez for number 2 of the season. Martinez gives up that home run in 2 innings, and Taylor Scott was able to provide a scoreless inning. But for the Cubs, he got some really good pitching out of Jordan Wicks. He did allow a home run to Jake Myers, 3rd home run in the campaign, but that's really all he allowed, 2 runs surrendered in 6 innings. And for Wicks, he was really struggling with the walks coming into this one, about 5 walks per 9 innings. No walks in 6 innings. Meanwhile, you had Yancy Almonte, Mark Leiter Jr., both combined for 2 scoreless innings, and Ben Brown was able to give you a scoreless inning as well. You're also able to have the Kansas City Royals cash for you. 3-2, they take down the Toronto Blue Jays. Kevin Gausman has had his struggles to begin the season, but this one was not on him. He gives up 3 runs in 6 2/3 innings, but Vlad Guerrero Jr. had a play that he had to make at first base, and he did not. Completely killed Kevin Gausman's outing. Meanwhile, Nate Pearson gives you an out of the bullpen scoreless. Tim Mesa, a scoreless inning, and the Toronto Blue Jays continue to be inept at the plate. 10 men left on base. You had, for this game, Michael Wacha get into a whole bunch of danger in 4 1/3 innings. He allows 8 hits, 3 walks, but only gives up 2 runs. And then from there, the bullpen holds down the fort. Chris Stratton, 1 2/3 innings scoreless. John Schreiber, scoreless inning. James McArthur, scoreless 8th and 9th innings to be able to get that one to the window. And also being able to get to the window, the San Francisco Giants. They take down the New York Mets, this by a count of 5-1. And the Giants have been a little bit up down all around this far of the season, but they did a nice job of getting to Luis Severino for 3 runs over the course of 6 innings for Severino. From there, Drew Smith gives up 2 runs in an inning. Jake Diekman, a scoreless inning, but nothing doing off of Logan Webb. Logan Webb just continues to be so masterful at home. 8 scoreless innings out of him. From there, you did have to have Camilo Duval come into this game after Tyler Rogers got into a little bit of a sticky situation, gives up 3 hits and a hit while getting just 1 out of the bullpen, but Camilo Duval closes the door, gets a pair of outs out of the bullpen, so the Giants, they're able to get the cash. And if you're looking overall at what we're getting in baseball currently, it's actually been now more unders than overs thus far this season, as we have seen 166 overs, so 177 unders. That's a 51.6% hit rate to the under. Meanwhile, road teams, they continue to be hot on the money line, 183 and 173 thus far this season, while favorites, they're hanging at about 58.5%. If you're laying that juice, though, you're not cashing very much, 206 and 146 on the money line. And if you're looking at the last 7 days of Major League Baseball, it has been relatively that. 53 and 38 are favorites on the money line for 58.2%. Road teams have had a little bit of a rough go of it, but the unders have been the story. 51 unders, 36 overs, with 4 pushes along the way on totals. That's 58.6% over the last 7 days. So that's what we're seeing in baseball right now. That's what we all got on Tuesday. Now let's take a look at Wednesday and the NL Central, along with Philadelphia Phillies, with John Jansen of Fox Sports Philadelphia, the Gambler. He joins me next on the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now a part of the VSiN Family Podcast.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball. This is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
Everybody, from lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And it is always great to be joined by this man, as John Jansen. He does absolutely tremendous work taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of baseball. He's over there at Fox Sports Philadelphia, The Gambler, on their wide variety of shows. I know that he also does some movie reviews, some game reviews, so he does a tremendous job on that front. And for those that like college football, this man is a Heisman Trophy voter as well. You're able to follow him on Twitter /X at the letter J, and then his last name, Jansen, J-A-N-S-E-N, then the number 34 altogether. And John, always great to get you aboard. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. And the Phillies are on a winning streak. It's good to see the Phillies actually competing in the month of April.
Absolutely. And it has been interesting to take a look at this Philadelphia Phillies team. As we are doing this, we are unsure how the game turned out for Tuesday, but what do you think has been the biggest thing for the Phillies? Because if you look on paper, personally, I don't necessarily see a 15-8 team with the way that the bullpen has been a little bit less than stellar, the way that we have seen Bryce Harper go through a funk, and I believe that he's currently on paternity leave. Congratulations to him. But that said, they have been able to find a way to be able to crank out these one-run wins.
Yeah, they have. A lot of that's down to starting pitching. Starting pitching has been excellent for them. A lot of this, too, is they're on this winning streak, or went on a winning streak when they were playing Colorado and Chicago. So the White Sox, not the Cubs. Cubs are doing okay. White Sox are not. It has a lot to do with that opponent, certainly. But even this kind of performance we weren't seeing last year, we haven't seen even the year before that. They really haven't competed in the month of April and the month of May. So this is a little bit different for them. A lot of it comes down to starting pitching. The hitting is good. The overall numbers aren't great for this season. They started off very, very slow, and things kind of really got rolling against Colorado and Chicago, but they have 5 straight games of 7 or more runs, so that's very good, and they're hitting well. I'm not overly impressed with a lot of the lineup. Still thinks there's some things to clean up there. The best thing is Trey Turner looks like Trey Turner again, and I think that was one of the biggest questions coming into the season. Were you getting first half Trey Turner or second half Trey Turner? And I just think he's a great baseball player. They signed him for $300 million for a reason, and he looks like a $300 million player.
Yep, that has been absolutely massive for them. Turner not necessarily supplying the home runs, but he's been able to move the line, doing a tremendous job on that front. So that has been big for them. And just having those guys that have been consistent towards the bottom of the lineup in terms of being able to reach base, that has been a big thing for the Philadelphia Phillies, as it has been an interesting NL East to this point, as I think that we were both expecting some regression from the Miami Marlins. Didn't think it would be quite 6-8 team bad, but when you take a look at all the injuries to their starting pitching, it does make a little bit of sense as to why. But how do you take a look at really the big three? Obviously the Phillies and then the New York Mets, who have been able to come on strong after a rough start to the season. Then it just does feel like the Atlanta Braves are once again the Death Star, not just in this division, but really in the National League along with the Dodgers.
The Mets have been playing a lot better than I thought they would this season, at least to start out. You know, 12-10, I think that's a little bit better than I would have expected. That's still kind of where I see them, though. They're about around .500 team, and they'll be like that through most of the season. The Braves, though, it's the lineup. So whatever you want to say about starting pitching, their depth, whatever the case may be after Spencer Strider went out, still, the thing is, they're one of the best hitting teams in baseball. They might be the best lineup in all of baseball, and they've been playing like it so far this season, and pitching's still good. You know, there's still some depth there. They're going to have to try and get some guys to, you know, Max Fried is going to have to be ace quality. He's going to have to replace the kind of production Spencer Strider had, and somebody else is going to have to step up. But overall depth, that stuff you worry about for the playoffs, I think you worry about that when you're going up against the Phillies. Like, the Braves have struggled in 5-game series, I think, because the Phillies' top-end starting rotation is really good. And the Braves have struggled with that. But for a 162-game season, they can survive off of the amount of pitching that they have in the rotation and the amount of pitching they have in the bullpen, and their lineup's going to pretty much take care of all the work. So, yeah, I think you're right. Braves are going to be trending towards being an over 100-win team. I don't know if the Phillies are going to get there. I can at least say the Phillies will be competitive in this division. They haven't been. It's been the Braves. They've been running away with it pretty much for the past few years, and nobody's been really competing. I think this year, for the first time, the Phillies might be able to compete. Now, what does that mean? I think maybe the Phillies are a 95-win team, 93-95, which is better than they have been, and maybe an even improvement upon those numbers. I just think that this is the first time the Phillies might actually push Atlanta to win that division instead of Atlanta cruising in that division.
Yeah, with the Atlanta Braves, they have been the Death Star in recent years. But that said, it has been really interesting to take a look at this National League thus far this season, as John Jansen, who does great work over at Fox Sports Philadelphia, The Gambler, joining me on the Baseball Betting Show, because just alluded to it, it felt like going into the season, it would be the Atlanta Braves and the LA Dodgers fighting for sort of 1 and 1A and then everyone else. But we've seen the Dodgers have some real struggles towards the beginning part of the season. The Atlanta Braves have not. 15-6, that's a rock solid start. I mean, I know that there were high expectations on the Atlanta Braves, but if you're winning 15 out of every 21 games, you're certainly doing something right. But we've noticed those teams in the NL Central, all but one of them, entered into a Tuesday with a winning record. And I do think that things might be a little bit tighter than many people thought with regards to the difference between the Braves, the Dodgers, and everyone else in that National League.
It's going to be interesting with the Dodgers. So the Dodgers, it's their lineup is going to carry them through a lot of this season. And the fact that you're seeing two of the top OPS leaders in all of baseball are Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani. Those guys are going to carry them a long way. And of course, Freddie Freeman and the rest of that group. It's just going to be, how does pitching settle down for the Dodgers? It's not been overly terrible. Their starting rotation has been good. Their bullpen has been a little bit shaky. Still, they need some of the arms in the starting rotation to settle in as well. Yamamoto, really. And we'll see when it comes to injuries, if they are able to stay healthy. It's going to be really interesting for the Dodgers how that pitching staff kind of holds up through an entire season and what the shape they're in is going to be heading into the postseason. I do think early on you are seeing the Dodgers very clearly don't have a championship pedigree pitching. That is something that they're still going to have to figure out. And it could be figured out internally. Again, could be figured out by Glasnow having a full healthy season, Yamamoto figuring it out, and some other guys along that rotation that kind of figure some things out. So there's some stuff that can happen internally that could go very well for them. And guys, you know, stepping up in performance and showing growth to some of their younger pitchers. That still remains to be seen, though. It, to me, feels like the Braves are just, they can weather any storm throughout the season. They can be the most consistent team throughout the season, and they are going to go into the postseason most likely as the best team in all of baseball. And that's even without their ace and maybe one of the best pitchers in baseball, Spencer Strider, in the rotation. It just feels like we're getting that way. The West is competitive right now because the Dodgers still kind of figuring things out, 13-11 this season. So that could be competitive. I'm not overly convinced that the Padres or Diamondbacks lineup I like, but I'm not overly convinced that those two teams are going to be able to compete for a full season with the Dodgers. It still feels like that is the Dodgers division, but in terms of just the upper echelon, who's the best? The Braves just seem better than everybody else.
Yeah, with the Atlanta Braves, they haven't even necessarily gotten a lot of power out of Ronald Acuña Jr. quite yet as well. They've had a few guys be in and out of the fold, so when those guys get going, then you know that it's really going to be scary. But what else is really scary is taking a look at some of these bottom teams in the big leagues, because the one thing I picked up on here in the first few weeks of the season, and I'm not sure if you agree / disagree, it does feel like those bottom few teams, the Colorado Rockies. Right now, I'd throw the Miami Marlins in there. If they get healthier, they might be able to avoid that. But them, no doubt about it, the Chicago White Sox, it just feels like they're about as not competitive as it gets. And typically, you have one or two teams that just stink it up to begin the season. Reds a few years ago, last year the Oakland A's, but it just feels like a new level of stink with the likes of the Rockies and the White Sox this year compared to past years.
The White Sox especially, that was, to see it back-to-back, you know, you see Colorado and Chicago and Phillies have played some really bad teams to start the season. We've been seeing these teams here in Philly and we've gotten a close-up view. Nothing looks as bad as Chicago does right now. They can't hit anything. It was pretty pathetic what I saw against the Phillies. I know the Philly starting rotation, they're getting a lot of love, and there's some really talented arms in there. But Ranger Suarez is a 25-inning or more scoreless streak. Spencer Turnbull has been out of his mind. I mean, these lineups are good, and really, I think it got even worse against Chicago. Chicago's lineup couldn't hit anything. Colorado was certainly bad. I know Miami's bad, but Chicago has pretty much the trifecta of they have no starting rotation, they have a bad bullpen, and they can't hit a single thing. They only really had that home run that Eloy Jimenez had against Aaron Nola and couldn't generate any other offense. It's a bad baseball team all around. I was pretty disgusted what I saw by the White Sox. Like, very, very disgusted. Yeah, as you just said, there's always a team or two you see. Really bad baseball. That may be some of the worst I've seen it in quite some time.
Yeah, it has been really awful what we've seen out of the Chicago White Sox, and going to be interesting to see what we get out of them on Wednesday, because right now you're finding them as about a plus 160 to a plus 170 underdog against Minnesota Twins. And I mean, for the White Sox, if you're looking for a bright spot, Kirk Crochet has been relatively solid as a starter, but getting just plus 160 to plus 170, I'm not willing to take a shot, because even if he goes out there and he's dominant, I mean, who knows if they're going to be able to give him a single run of support. And as we know in baseball, it is impossible to win a game if your team does not score. And right now the White Sox entering into Wednesday, averaging about 2.1 runs per contest.
Yeah, and I think with him too, he started off really well, and he's got the stuff. Even against the Phillies, he only pitched three innings and gave up seven earned and three home runs. They got hit really hard, and a lot of that was really just Alec Boehm. Still, the stuff is good. I think he's just kind of learning how to be a starting pitcher. I don't want to take that risk with him as a guy that I still think is trying to learn how to go deeper into games and again, learn how to be a starter while going up against the Twins. I know the Twins, 8-13, not very good, but Joey Ryan, I like a lot, and I think he could end up pitching pretty well against the White Sox lineup, as you just said. I mean, they kickstarted some really good performances for the Phillies. I think the Phillies went seven or more innings pitched in every single one of those games. So Ryan could certainly go deep here. I don't think the White Sox are going to hit. Bad recipe. Run line maybe in play for the Twins, just because the White Sox aren't scoring any runs at all. And that's a good way to kind of fade their lineup. But yeah, any way to fade their lineup is kind of where I'm.
Yeah, I do think that this is going to be just a bunch of we don't want any part of whatsoever moving forward. As joining me on the show, John Jansen, who does great work over at Fox Sports Philadelphia, the Gamblers, joining me on the Baseball Betting Show. And then I take a look at this game, and I think that this one is so interesting because with the Toronto Blue Jays, even though their record isn't the world's worst, I haven't really liked what I've seen out of them. They're going to be on the road facing off against the Kansas City Royals with Alec Marsh getting the start, as Marsh was absolutely awful last season, but has come back this year. He's been able to limit the hard contact, has been able to limit the walks, and I've really liked what I've seen there. But the Blue Jays, they are a favorite of about minus 120, minus 125 or so with Yariel Rodriguez getting the start for them. How do you take a look at this game? Because with the Royals, low expectations for them coming into the season, but thus far, they've been one of the biggest surprises in the league.
Yeah, they've slowed down a little bit, obviously, but a lot, I think, has to do with they just ended up taking on Baltimore. So Baltimore's a really, really tough team. Obviously, we have seen that. Their lineup is a gauntlet. Some other guys are stepping up other than the usual suspects or some of the big prospects that have came up, like Henderson and Rutschman. There are other guys that are stepping up. So Baltimore team is a gauntlet. Toronto did end up winning the first game of the series, but I do think Kansas City could be a little bit of a nice buy-low option here. They're the home team, a slight underdog here against Toronto. I think the pitching matchup, as you just said with Marsh, wasn't good last season. I just kind of want to take what I've seen this season and see if I can continue to ride that. Obviously, that can kind of blow up right in my face, and this Toronto Blue Jays lineup can get after him pretty quickly because we know the lineup can be dangerous. This seems to be a nice buy-low spot here for Kansas City. Due for a win because it's a team I still think that is playing pretty well. They just run into some really, really tough teams and some really tough games. So I think a good buy-low spot if you're going to get them as even odds or maybe even as a slight dog.
Yep, I do think that this is a really nice buy-low spot as well, and I do think that we've got ourselves a really nice slate that is going to be going down for Wednesday. Like I said, we don't know how the game for Tuesday turned out with regards to the Phillies and the Reds, but we're going to have the Phillies as a very, very slight favorite slash to pick them here against the Cincinnati Reds coming up for Wednesday with Spencer Turnbull going up against Nick Lodolo. And these are a pair of guys who have dealt with injuries over the last few years, but have really liked what I've seen out of Spencer Turnbull ever since that no-hitter a few seasons ago. Just hasn't been able to stay healthy, but he has looked tremendous this year. And Nick Lodolo, though it's been a small sample size and no one of the starts came against our good friends, the Chicago White Sox, he's looked good coming off of injury as well.
Yeah, and Lodolo, I remember watching a few games last season against the Phillies. He pitched really well against them. So he's a little bit of a tricky lefty. Love the stuff. See him back and pitching the way he is. That's huge for Cincinnati. And I think that's a big piece for them to have to compete in that NL Central. Lodolo, though, has pitched well against the Phillies before. Phillies are hitting a little bit better against left-handed pitching so far this season. A lot of that down to Kyle Schwarber, who's hit well against lefties. But so far, yeah, they have a WOBA of 3.48, I think, for the Phillies this season. And that lands them in sixth in Major League Baseball so far against lefties. They've been hitting very well against lefties. So I'm a little cautious with that. Thing here is, too, is Turnbull, he pitched long in his last start. And I think they're going to let him go long again here if it does allow that he's pitching well, because he is going to be likely out of the starting rotation come Saturday, because that's when Taiwan Walker comes back, and they're saying as of this moment, Turnbull's going to go to the pen because he hasn't pitched a whole lot in the past few years because of injuries, so they're going to kind of take it slow with him. So we'll see if they maybe just turn him loose, and he can maybe try and prove himself one more time, as he's proved himself very well. I liked what I seen from Turnbull, but there's certainly things there that I think Cincinnati can do against him. I think this one, I might be leaning Cincinnati here, because I just love the Lodolo matchup against the Phillies. And the Phillies lineup has been good. I'm just afraid that it's going to start slowing down a little bit. I think we're seeing too much of a run surge and a power surge that just the numbers aren't backing up a whole lot right now. So I think they're due to kind of slow down a little bit. And Lodolo's a pitcher that I can see slowing that down.
And then allow me to throw this question out there as well. This both pertains to the Philadelphia Phillies and just league-wide. Do you just pick up on some teams and just some units in general that do get off to a little bit of a slow start to the season? Because a little bit of a reason why I've been a little bit tough to trust in the Phillies as far as that, it feels like every year their bullpen has a really bad first month of the season. And though the Phillies have had a nice record thus far, you know as well as I do, the Phillies have been one of the most rough bullpens in the big leagues. And that does have me a little bit skittish in this spot just because I have no idea what it is. Typically after April, the Phillies bullpen finds their way. But once again, this year, they've had a rough first month of the season.
They have. And there's a couple things. It does get really rough in the back end of that bullpen. You know, they've had to pitch guys like Nick Nelson, who's not good. Some other guys, forgetting some of their names because they're guys that probably aren't going to stay on the major league roster for all that long. You know, Connor Brogdon was getting innings. The back end of their bullpen's
not good. Ricardo Pinto.
Pinto, yes, that's the one I was thinking of. Pinto, not doing very well. I do also think that if you look at Soto's numbers and you look at Jose Alvarado's numbers, they're doing very well. It's just one game for some reason for each that they got blown up big time. A game recently where Soto gave up 5 runs in the first game of the season, Jose Alvarado gave up 5 runs and has not given up a run since. There's a little bit of back and forth there. It is not the number one bullpen like I think some had them ranked heading into the season, but it is probably an okay bullpen that has some really good top-of-the-line arms. I've loved what I've seen from Jeff Hoffman. They could put him in any situation. He's been excellent for them. But they do have guys that are high-end bullpen arms that are pitching very well that they can use. But they can get into a little bit of trouble at times, and I think we've seen that really in the back end of their bullpen. The numbers look mediocre. It's not as bad as the numbers suggest, but also it does kind of tell you that this bullpen really isn't as strong as I think some thought heading into the season.
And then it's the parte of Marte, Junior Marte,
yes.
Is like quite good for this bullpen as well. Yeah. Just like John, you're always great as a guest on this podcast. You do great work over there at Fox Sports Philadelphia, the Gambler, taking a look at this game that we all know and love. But as we know, Philadelphia always find themselves to be the epicenter of the sports world. So let the good people at home know it's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, you can follow me just at JJansen34. You'll find all my stuff there. The Line Change Podcast. Hopefully I can get you on that sometime. We can talk some baseball, talk some shop. Yeah, you can follow me at JJansen34 and just look up The Line Change with John Jansen wherever you get your apps, wherever you get your podcasts, excuse me.
And John does an absolutely tremendous job taking a look at this great game of baseball that we all know and love. And it's always great to be able to get him on the show. Big thanks to John for joining me on the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Wednesday as we touch them all.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. It is always great to get John Jansen aboard. He does great work over at Fox Sports Philadelphia, The Gambler, taking a look at this wonderful game of baseball. I know that on top of that, everything happening out there in the city of Philadelphia, everything from the Eagles, the 76ers, heck, their MLS soccer team, list goes on and on. He does a great job of gauging it all. So big thanks to John for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Wednesday as we touch them all.
If a game is listed on the betting board, Greg has a side and a total on it, so it is time to touch them all.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter/X feed at @unit_41, and we are going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is where we go with the National League games first, then the American League games. Any interleague games, those are going to be at the bottom. That'll keep things all nice, neat, clean, and easy. So, without further ado, let's dive in on this first game. It is 9:51, 9:52 on the betting board. The Arizona Diamondbacks hit the road to face off against the St. Louis Cardinals as Kyle Gibson is on the bump for St. Louis and Jordan Montgomery is on the bump for Arizona. And Arizona is a favorite of between -115 to -125. Between +105 to +110 is that number. On St. Louis, 8 is the total. The over is -115. The under is -105. And I did set the Diamondbacks at a -113. So right now we're waiting for this to go down by about 2 or so pennies if we're able to get that -113, which I'm thinking that there's a good chance that we're going to be able to do. So good to be willing to look there. Meanwhile, if we can get up to like a +115 or so, looking at the Cardinals. So right now we're in a little bit of wait and see mode on this one. The line movement will be telling me where we go here. Probably would rather lay a little bit more of like a -113 with the Diamondbacks. So just because with Jordan Montgomery, for one, he is facing off against his former team. And typically when a pitcher faces off against their former team, it either goes really, really good or really, really bad for them. Not a lot of in between, but Jordan Montgomery is just flat out a gamer. He misses pretty much all of spring training because teams just refuse to sign him in the offseason, but came out there in that first start against the San Francisco Giants. His team won the game 17-1, by the way, but gave up one run in 6 innings. He had good command, did not walk a batter, not necessarily getting a ton of swings and misses as of right now, but that's not really been his game, and gets to go up against the St. Louis Cardinals unit that they've been in rough form in terms of their offense. Prior to that game on Monday, they had won 8 straight games without a single home run, and you tell that there's just a lot of guys that you expect to be solid in this lineup, just not inning. Entering into yesterday, you had pretty much 6 out of your top 9 players in terms of total at-bats, hitting a 205 or lower. Paul Goldschmidt, Brandon Donovan, Nolan Gorman, all hitting a 2.02 or lower. Goldschmidt, just 2 home runs this far this season. Nolan Arenado, even though he's hitting about a 2.90, he supplied just 1 home run this far this season. Nolan Gorman has been able to give you 4 bombs, but hasn't been able to move the line. Lars Nootbaar has been all sorts of banged up this season, so that's been a bit of an issue. And for the Cardinals, what has really been their saving grace has been their pitching. This bullpen last year was 22nd in the big leagues in terms of ERA. They've been able to do a much better job this far this season with Ryan Helsley being able to come back after he was injured for much of last season. Pretty much was the lone guy returning with a sub-3.5 ERA, but been able to get some good innings out of Andrew Kittredge. You've seen a few guys just in general be able to get their act together. Jojo Romero, Matthew Liberatore, they've been solid in the bullpen. But for the Arizona Diamondbacks, this is about a league average bullpen. Nothing great, nothing terrible. Scott McGough has not been too terrific for the team, but I like Ben Jarvis as a little bit of a long guy. The likes of Ryan Thompson, Kevin Ginkle, they do a solid job being able to hold down the fort, but the Arizona Diamondbacks do have the very clear advantage in terms of their lineup. You've got a pair of guys in Kenel Marte, Lourdes Gurriel, entering into yesterday hitting at least a 280 with 5 home runs apiece. Christian Walker's been able to give you 375 on base, and the Arizona Diamondbacks have been a top 8 offense as far as this season, with Corbin Carroll giving you just 1 home run and a 215 average. So that's been incredible, with Blaze Alexander really being able to step up for the team, and for Kyle Gibson, just as I'd had the world's greatest start to the season. Very much a guy that's going to pitch a lot of contact. Last year was getting just 7.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. This season, just 14 punchouts in 25 innings, but has really been allowing the deep ball. 5 home runs in his first 4 games this far this season, so that has been a big issue. Doesn't necessarily issue a lot of walks, but I do think that for Gibson, he's going to give up a little bit too much hard contact, and I think that Jordan Montgomery goes out and gives a good start against his former team. I did set my total at 8.6. I think that the Diamondbacks get to the Cardinals, and I do think that the Cardinals are going to start to heat up with their bats a little bit more, so I'm going to be looking at this total over, and I do like the Diamondbacks at a -113 or less on the money line. Like I said, if we get past a +114 or so, that'd be my buy point on the Cardinals. A little bit wait and see mode, but would rather have the Diamondbacks. 953, 954 on the betting board. The New York Mets, they hit the road. They're facing off against the San Francisco Giants. Blake Snell goes for the Giants. Jeanmonet is on the bump for the Mets. The Mets are between a +114 to a +120 underdog, between -130 to -135, that number on San Francisco. 8 is the total, over and under, both at -110. I'm going to be willing to take the Mets, need at least a +118 to be able to do so. For the Mets, it's been a up and down season for them. They start 0-5, they get on a hot streak, and then they had lost on Sunday and Monday going into Tuesday. But for Blake Snell, he's just in really bad form. He was one, in my opinion, the luckiest pitchers I had ever seen last season. He was giving up north of 4 walks per 9 innings and just had one of the most incredible strand rates we've ever seen in baseball. And right now he's paying for those sins. He just doesn't look to be in great form in general. The offseason, just not being able to get into a spring training, that really has hurt him. And he has been given up 5 walks in 11 2/3 innings, hasn't been able to deliver a lot of length in general. Going up against someone in Jeanmonet that really, since I would say late June of 2023, has a sub-3.5 ERA. Now, walks have been an issue for him as well. He has given up about 4.5 walks per 9 innings as far this season, but he has been able to supply about 9.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. And for the New York Mets, if you could get to Edwin Diaz, that is absolutely incredible, as he's been a great closer for the team. But now they've got their setup man and Brooks Raley currently dealing with a little bit of an injury. And Bonavino has been a little bit up and down, and after a nice season last year, Jake Diekman has been a bit of an issue. But for the New York Mets, have liked the way that their bats have been able to heat up. Last two nights entering into Tuesday, they went a little bit cold, but Pete Alonso consistently towards the top of the big leagues with regards to home runs on the road. He's already got 7 bombs thus far this season. Starling Marte has been able to give you 4 home runs, and now you've got guys who are just moving the line. Harrison Bader, Marte, who I mentioned before, both hitting above at 285. Tyrone Taylor's been able to give you some good at-bats as well. So Francisco Lindor, Brandon Nimmo, guys like this struggling a little bit, but all in all, I've liked to see what I've been seeing out of them. Meanwhile, for the San Francisco Giants, it's very hot and cold with this lineup. They actually had Nick Ahmed be able to move the line, and Lamont Wade Jr. It's giving you about a 450 on base, but you do have Therio Estrada, Matt Chapman, both only hitting about a 225. Combined 7 home runs between the two of them, but they're not necessarily drawing a lot of walks. Michael Conforto, 5 home runs as far this season, led off the series against his former team, the Mets, with a home run as well, so that's been big for the team. But guys like Mikey Strumsky, Wilmer Flores have not been able to give you a whole heck of a lot thus far this season. But what is really the big issue that you do have with the San Francisco Giants as well, they back up Blake Snell with a bullpen that has been absolutely terrible thus far this season. You've got both Taylor and Tyler Rogers, who I like, and Camilo Duval is one of the better closers in all of baseball. Perhaps Luke Jackson coming back in the fold after he had a sub-4 ERA last season, and he started out the year on the injured list. That'll help, but the Giants going to be yesterday a 5.47 bullpen ERA, second worst out there in the big leagues, and it's not like the New York Mets are necessarily the Mona Lisa Vito of bullpen pitching or anything like that, but they entered into yesterday number 5, so they provide Sean Manea with a whole heck of a lot, just more help in general. Now, Manea did pitch for the Giants last season, so there's going to be a little bit of familiarity there, but as we know, with bringing in Aurea Soler, bringing in Matt Chapman, it is a little bit of a new-look Giants team as well, and I do think that Manea is going to be able to do a better job here than a guy in Cell that is just not in great form. I wish I could put it any other way. So here at a plus 118 or higher, I'm looking at the Mets on the money line, and I did set my total at an 8.4. I do think that that familiarity helps out the Giants bats, and I do think that for the Mets, they're going to be able to get to Blake Snell. So looking at the over and the money line of the Metropolitans, 955, 956 on the betting board. The Philadelphia Phillies hit the road to facing off against the Cincinnati Reds. Yes, we are on to Cincinnati, and they're on to Nicolodolo getting the start for them. Meanwhile, Spencer Turnbull is on the bump for the Phillies. With the Reds are anywhere between minus 103 to minus 110, between minus 107 to minus 112. That number on the Phillies, 8.5 is the total. Over is minus 120, and the under is even. And with the Reds, I did make them a favorite of minus 108, so I'm going to be willing to ride with them on this rather pick'em line. Have liked what I've seen on Nick Lodolo thus far. He had 10 strikeouts in his first start of the season. Now, granted, once again, that was against the Chicago White Sox, and the White Sox have been all sorts of terrible, but that said, Lodolo coming off the injured list has looked absolutely stellar. What I really liked, what I've seen out of him thus far, the 12 innings pitch in his two starts, just one walk. Meanwhile, for Spencer Turnbull, he has really been able to lock it down as well. He's getting about 9 strikeouts per 9 innings. Really, it's getting more strikeouts than ever before. The command has still been there, sub 3 walks per 9 innings. Currently got a .123 ERA. Obviously, the fielding independent is a little bit higher than that, but has given up just one home run, has been able to limit the hard contact. So both of these guys are in very good form, though. I do think that there might be a little bit of regression with both of these guys. We were talking about with John Jansen. The Phillies have been the beneficiaries of playing against the likes of the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Chicago White Sox and company here to begin the season, but for the Philadelphia Phillies, they've been able to get online a little bit more with their bats, but have been a little bit concerned that most of their offense has been coming at home. At home, the Philadelphia Phillies averaging well north of 5 runs per game. On the road entering into yesterday, more like 3.5 runs per contest, with a little bit over a half a home run per game when they've been on the road, though. You do have Brandon Marsh, Kyle Schwarber entering into yesterday with a combined 11 home runs. Both of these guys, about a .320 on base. Bryce Harper, I know that he's been on a little bit of paternity leave, so he has been a bit in and out of the fold. You have to expect him to probably be out until the next series. But Trey Turner, he's been able to give you about a .390 on base. And even if you do get Harper, he's been a little bit rough to begin the season as well. But JT Realmuto, not aiming for the world's greatest average, but has been able to supply a trio of homers. But have liked what I've seen out of the Cincinnati Reds team as well. Got a pair of guys in Spencer Sear, along with Ellie De La Cruz, who have been able to do a nice job of supplying power, 3-plus home runs apiece. Both of these guys entering into yesterday with north of a .360 on base. Now, you do have a few guys like Tyler Stevenson, Christian Encarnacion and Strand, Jameer Candelario, Santiago Espino, and Will Benson. They're all hitting a .200 or lower, but the guys are hitting are really, really hitting, so it's a little bit of a, shall we say, feast or famine lineup. But something else I was referring to with John Jansen, the Philadelphia Phillies, and they're very rough form in the bullpen. Sir Anthony Dominguez, Gregory Soto, guys like this have been supplying north of a 5 ERA, and as a result, you've got a Philadelphia Phillies team that entered it yesterday with a 5.61 bullpen ERA, dead last in the big leagues. And for the Cincinnati Reds, they've honestly been able to do a solid job with their bullpen, entering into yesterday 16th in the league in terms of their bullpen ERA. With the Reds, it's not like they're necessarily amazing. Buck Farmer has been a little bit up and down. Alexis Diaz has been a little bit shaky, but when he's on, he's on. But they've gotten out Sam Moll back in the fold. Lucas Sims is able to give you some good innings. Brent Suter, after he had to give some long relief a few days ago, should be good to go in this game as well. So I do think that there's some value here on the Cincinnati Reds, because for the Philadelphia Phillies bullpen, not sure what it is, but they always begin the season in relatively rough form. So going to be going with the Reds on the money line, set them at a minus 108. And I did set my total at 9.1, banking on a little bit of regression with both of these starters. So looking at that money line of the old Red Legs, ain't going to be taking a look at the over. 957, 958 on the bank board. It is the Milwaukee Brewers. They're on the road facing off against Pittsburgh Pirates. Quinn Priester is going to be on the bump for the Buccos. It is going to be Bryce Wilson on the bump for the Brewers, but this was not announced until late in the night on Tuesday. So this is a game that's off the board as I record this, but I've got my handicap. I'm willing to lay up to a minus 120 with the Brewers. Need at least a plus 122 to take a shot on the Pirates. And then in after loss, I'm going to be looking at the over 9 or higher to the under. The Brewers had a little bit of a shakeup with Wade Miley going on the injured list, but We've already seen Wilson get a start in the season already, and in that start against the San Diego Padres, that was about a week or so ago, last Wednesday, he went 3 2/3 innings, didn't allow any runs, and he's just a hold-down-the-fort sort of pitcher. He's been a little bit better with his strikeout numbers this season, 12 punchouts and 13 2/3 innings for his career. He's more around about 6.5 to 7 strikeouts per 9 innings, but does a relatively solid job in terms of command. The one thing that you fear with him is that he does give up the deep ball. He's already given up 3 home runs in 13 2/3 innings, but this is a Pittsburgh Pirates unit that has been one of the most rough teams in the big leagues in terms of just generating power, and got a lot of young guys I think have a lot of upside, but the inconsistency is clearly there with the likes of Jack Swinitsky, Henry Davis, and you're able to throw in their O'Neill Cruz. These guys are all hitting a 242 or less. Really, none of these guys have been able to give you north of a 300 on base. Brian Hayes has moved the line. He and Brian Reynolds about a 375 on base going into yesterday, and you do have a few veterans like Andrew McCutchen, who went deep yesterday. He's starting to find it. Michael A. Taylor has been able to give you about a 275 average as well, but the Pirates, they have a ways to go with regards to their lineup. And for the Brewers, they entered into yesterday averaging north of 6 runs per contest away from home, and the young guys have really stepped up for them. I do think that there's going to be some regression with the likes of Joey Ortiz. You're able to throw in the Bryce Turang, Blake Perkins, Jackson Chirillo, pretty much all these guys other than Chirillo, hitting well above a 275. Joey Weimer's been a little bit rough as well, but I've also liked what I've seen out of William Contreras. North of a 400 base, 4 home runs for him. Willie Adames doing a much better job of being able to get on base as well. And I will say for the Milwaukee Brewers, they've always struggled with lefties. Good news is, you got Quinn Pricer as a righty, so that is going to be very helpful for them, and you don't face a ton of lefties in this Pirates bullpen as well. You've got David Benar, Aroldis Chapman, both of these guys are lefties, but past that, you do have a few other righties that you're able to match up with, like Ryder Ryan, Hunter Stratton, so that's going to be massive for them, and for Quinn Pricer, he just has not been able to put it together at the big league level. He looked really good at the minor league level, his off-speed pitches, his curveball was looking a little bit better, and then he goes out there and just gets completely smoked in his first start of the season against Boston, giving up 5 runs, 4 of which were earned, 3 bombs, and 4 1/3 innings, and I do have to wonder if he's ever going to be able to put it together at the big league level, and if he just needs a little bit more seasoning at the minor league level, and though I don't think that you're going to be able to get a ton of length out of Bryce Wilson, this Brewers bullpen is still one of the best in the big leagues. All you need from him, in my opinion, is like the 3 2/3 innings that he did about a week or so ago against the San Diego Padres for the Milwaukee Brewers. Overall, in terms of bullpen ERA entering into Tuesday, 7th in the big leagues, you do have guys who are able to fill multiple innings like Colby Milner, Trevor McGill, Brian Hudson have been solid, and then Elvis Piguero, Joe Piams. Both of these guys had a sub-3.5 ERA season ago. Ebner Uribe can be a little bit over the place, but he's got great stuff. So it is a circumstance where at a minus 120 or less, I'm willing to lay with the Brewers, plus 122 or higher, looking at the Buccos, and then in half or less, I like the over 9 or higher. I'm going to be diving in on the under. 959, 960 on the betting board. It is the LA Dodgers. They are on the road. They're facing off against the Washington Nationals, as you've got Jake Irvin, who's on the bump for the Nats, and it is going to be the young gun and one Landon Knack, who's going to be getting the start with the Dodgers. Dodgers, sizable favorites, anywhere between minus 175 to minus 190, anywhere between plus 154 to plus 163. That's your number on Washington, and Dolan's game is 9.5. The over is anywhere between minus 105 to minus 110. Under is anywhere between minus 110 to a minus 115, and if you're looking to lay a run half with the Dodgers, most places have this right around about a minus 115, and I'd be willing to go up to a minus 128 on this run line, so I'm going to be willing to dive in there, seeing a few minus 120s. So good on that front for the LA Dodgers. This team has won so many games since the start of the 2022 regular season. Just 35 have landed on one run. As a matter of fact, a grand total of 225 games during the regular season for the Dodgers. I have to figure that this offense is going to start to wake up a little bit, and we did see that towards back half of the game yesterday, as for the Dodgers, you saw between Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, Teoscar Hernandez. Three guys have combined 17 home runs in 25 games thus far this season, with Betts and Ohtani both providing at least a 430 on base. Freddie Freeman has done a great job moving the line with a 400 on base. Will Smith is hitting a 300. Now, the problem that you've got with the LA Dodgers is the bottom of the fold has been terrible. Kike Hernandez, when you've had Gavin Lux, James Altman out there, along with Chris Taylor, guys like this, hitting a 210 or lower. That's been a little bit of an issue, and for the Dodgers, they were able to escape yesterday, but this bullpen has been average or below average entering into the day yesterday, about 19th in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. Ryan Brazier has been a little bit less than terrific. Alex Vesey has had his ups and downs over the last few seasons, so has been pretty solid this year with the 2.19 ERA. Feel good about Evan Phillips, but he did have to get used up yesterday, and for the Nationals, did enter into yesterday a top 10 bullpen in terms of ERA. Don't know if I have too much faith in that. I do like some of the guys that are out there. Jordan Weems has been very good. Dylan Flores actually been able to give you some good innings as well, but Tanner Rainey has not necessarily been his normal self. You've had someone like Robert Garcia, who's not necessarily been amazing. And for this Washington Nationals unit, they picked up quite a few guys in the offseason to be able to help out with regards to their power, but they just haven't necessarily gotten a lot of that thus far. Jesse Winker has been great at getting on base, 425 on base, so he's been a valuable pickup, but Eddie Rosario, Joey Gallo, both of these guys hitting below .150, and between the two of them, you've got four home runs and north of 110 at-bats. You just expect a little bit more there. And then some of the guys that were so good for the CMA season ago, Joey Meneses, Lane Thomas, both of these guys now hitting a .225 or lower, though. We'll say CJ Abrams has been absolutely tremendous. Six home runs, he's been able to give you some stolen bases, he's been able to provide about a .370 on base, so he's been pretty stellar on that front. Meanwhile, for Landon Eck, if you take a look at his minor league numbers, wasn't amazing, wasn't terrible. Unlike a lot of these Dodgers young guns like Bobby Miller, Dustin May, guys like this, he doesn't get as many swings and misses at the minor league level. He was getting about 9.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, and in his first start, he was presentable. He was halfway decent. He went 5 innings. I believe that he allowed 2 runs in that time span, didn't give out a lot of walks, wasn't blowing guys away, but all in all, I thought that it was relatively solid. I do think that he's going to be able to provide just enough for the LA Dodgers to be able to find a way to get the job done here. And for Jake Irvin, last time he took the bump, he was able to hold the Dodgers scoreless. I just don't think that that's going to be manifesting itself. Now for Irvin, he's much better than he was a season ago last year. About a 5.35 fielding pen compared to a 4.65 ERA. He was giving up 4 walks per 9 innings and has cut down on those. 6 walks in 23 innings thus far this season. He's been getting better with pretty much every start, and a lot of the runs that he's given up have been runs that have been just sort of via the team he's going up against, moving the line. We saw just things manifest a little bit in that start against Philadelphia Phillies, but on up has been able to do a solid job. But I do think that the Dodgers are going to be able to get going here. I don't think that they're going to be denied, and I do think the Nat gives up a few runs as well. So I said my total at a 9.6. I'm going to be looking at the over, and with the Dodgers, want to lay up to a -128 on this run line. 961, 962 on the betting board. The Miami Marlins hit the road. They're facing off against the Atlanta Braves. Sixto Sanchez is getting the start for the Miami Marlins, and Reynaldo Lopez is on the bump for the Atlanta Braves. Right now at Circa, the Braves open up a -230 favorite and -125 on the run line. +$2 is that price on Miami. 9 is the total. Over and under both at -110. And I'm going to be going over in this spot. I did set my total at a 9.6 for Sixto Sanchez. Long and winding road. Really liked him when he was getting starts in 2020 with the Miami Marlins, and then dealt with injuries, has been trying to come back, SNSA looks so great, and I just don't understand why they were trying to throw him in the bullpen as well. When he was out there in the bullpen, he just was not great this season, posting up a north of 6 ERA, and I do think that it's going to be very, very fascinating to see what we get out of him moving forward, because in 2023, he made a very, very brief return to the minor league level, but I mean, he's just very unproven. He's just a guy that when he was able to get sent up to the big league level with the Miami Marlins, he had a lot of great raw stuff, and just haven't seen that so much. When he was able to make his bullpen appearances, he's went 7 1/3 innings as far this season, and he's only gotten, I believe, 3 strikeouts and 3 walks thus far, and you can't imagine that he's going to be able to go deep, and he's backed up by a Miami Marlins bullpen that is one of the worst in the big leagues in terms of ERA. Entering into the day on Tuesday, for the Miami Marlins, they were 24th in the big leagues with regards to their bullpen ERA, a little bit north of 5, and you have to wonder who's going to be holding down the fort after him. George Soriano was a little bit of a long guy last season. He has been awful this far this season. You haven't been able to get the shorter guys like Tanner Scott, Andrew Nardi to be able to produce what they did a season ago. Calvin Foche, who comes in from the Tampa Bay Rays, has been solid, but for the Miami Marlins too, it's hard to win when you score a whopping 0 runs in the first 2 games of the series. I do think that they're going to be able to see this go a little bit northward, but right now the plate approach for this team, not great to say the least. Tim Anderson, he's a guy that doesn't provide any power whatsoever, and he's providing a .277 on base. That's an issue. You've had Brian De La Cruz be able to give the team 5 plus home runs. He's been able to supply about a .260 average, and Luis Arraez, he's still getting on base, about a .340 on base, .285 average, but when you've got Avisio Garcia, Josh Bell, Nick Fortes, these guys lying below a .230, not necessarily supplying a lot of pop. That's an issue, and even with a few injuries for the Atlanta Braves, this team is just still the death star with regards to their lineup. Matt Olson has not necessarily had the world's greatest start to the season, about a .320 on base, .212 average with 3 home runs, but you know that he's going to be able to pick it up. Ronald Acuna Jr. has only went deep once this far this season, but it's still supplying north of a 4 on base. You know that that's going to be going northward, and Marcell Ozuna has been really the leader in home runs in baseball this year with 9 bombs. touchdowns. Pretty much everyone 1 through 9 has been so fearsome for this Braves team. The lone trepidation that you do have, the pitching has been dealing with a few injuries. You have Spencer Strider still out of the fold, so they've had to mix and match a little bit, but Ronaldo Lopez is proving that he shouldn't have been in the bullpen last season. He's made 3 starts, and he's given up 1 run across 18 innings, 18 strikeouts and 6 walks in those innings. He's done so against the Astros, the White Sox, and the Mets, so he has faced off against one really, really good lineup, and a few others have been a little bit touch and go, but I think they can go out there, do a nice job against the Miami Marlins team that they haven't been anything special thus far this season. The bullpen backing him up has been pretty solid. Pierce Johnson has not been quite what he was a season ago, but Joey Jimenez, Dylan Lee, these are guys supplying a sub-3 ERA. Rossy Iglesias is still one of the better closers in the big league, so circumstance where I'm going to be willing to lay the run line with the Braves, willing to go up to a minus 134, and I do think that the Marlins find a little bit of offense, but I think that Sanchez just not going to be long for this game, and he's backed up by a rough bullpen to say the least, so going to be looking at that total of 9 over, so my total of 9.6, and the Braves run line. 963, 964 on the betting board, the Slam Diego Padres at the road to facing off against Colorado Rockies. Matt Waldron goes for the Pods, and right now for the Colorado Rockies, it's to be determined, so this game is off the board. Right now through the grapevine, I'm hearing that it's most likely going to be Ty Block, who either gets a start or a bulk appearance, backed up by this Rockies bullpen, and as a result, I did set my total at 11.7. Here at 11.5 or less, I'll be looking at the over 12 or higher. I'd be willing to dive in on the under, and for the Padres, willing to go up to a minus 157 on that money line. On the run line, willing to lay up to a minus 108, which means I need at least a plus 158 to be able to take a shot on the Colorado Rockies. It has just been rough for this Rockies team all season long. Good news for them is that they were able to get some offense going yesterday, and they were able to get the job done against the San Diego Padres, and I do think that there's going to be a little bit of positivity moving forward for this Colorado Rockies lineup. They had scored 2 runs or fewer in 6 out of the previous 7 games. That's just really, really hard to do at Coors Field, especially when most of those games did come at Coors Field, and you still have some guys that are able to move the line for the team. Elias Diaz, Ezekiel Tovar, Ryan McMahon, Brenton Doyle. They're all hitting at least a 300. Now you've got back the fold as well. Sean Borchardt, a little bit of a young guy who doesn't necessarily hit for a ton of power, but finds a way to be able to move the line. Brendan Donovan finally hit his first home run of the season. He, Nolan Jones, these guys have been big, giant disappointments, but I do think that the Padres are going to do a nice job of being able to put back the ball themselves. It's been a little bit of an up-down season for them. Manny Machado, along Fernando Tatis Jr. being in the middle of the fold really does help the scene, though. You did see Machado get the day off yesterday, so I have to be wondering on that front for Tatis. He's been able to supply 6 home runs. He's found a way to be able to get on base, but you really need to get Xander Bogaerts going. He's hitting below the Madrid sign of 200. He has not been great ever since being signed by this team. The bottom of the fold with guys like Tyler Wade and company has not been tremendous, but for Luis Capistrano, has really been able to upgrade the catcher spot after last year. It was really Gary Sanchez, who was not doing a great job of holding down the fourth tree. Cronenworth, Jerickson Profar. These are guys giving you north of 350 on base, and for the Padres, it's a relatively league average, just slightly above average bullpen. They had some nice acquisitions in the offseason. Aniel De Los Santos, Wandy Peralta, Yuki Matsui. These are all guys giving you a sub-3 ERA at the closer spot. Robert Suarez has been relatively solid as well. And for the Colorado Rockies, this continues to be a bottom-5 team in the big leagues in terms of their bullpen ERA. And they don't have a lot of guys that really give you a length either. You're probably going to be looking at Anthony Molina. He's right now got north of a 14 ERA. Justin Lawrence has been terrible. Tyler Kinley, north of a 6 ERA as well. I have to imagine you see quite a bit of Jalen Beeks in this game, as he's someone that has been able to be used for multiple innings, came up as a starter in the Red Sox organization, but that said, I do think that it's going to be relatively rough for our good friend Mr. Ty Block, who was trotted out there as a starter last season. Last season for the Colorado Rockies was posting up a 5.54 ERA with a strikeouts per 9 rate that was hovering right around 6, giving up 3 walks per 9 innings, gave up quite a bit of hard contact in general, and for Matt Waldron, he honestly has been relatively solid since that bad start they had against the St. Louis Cardinals in his first home start of the regular season, coming off of giving up a 5 spot against the Toronto Blue Jays, and honestly, he's been much better on the road than he has been at home. 2 road starts as far as the season against the Giants and the LA Dodgers. 2 runs, one of which was earned. He has been able to do a nice job keeping down the walks. He's given up about 3 walks per 9, and he's getting about 9 strikeouts per 9 as well. So I do think that Waldron is going to be able to go out there, give a relatively solid performance against a Rockies team that's going to be throwing a poo-poo platter of pitchers. So 11.5 or less, going to be looking at the over 12 or higher to the under. Willing to lay up to a minus 108 with that Padres run line. Need at least a plus 158 to take a shot on the Rockies money line. 965, 966 on the bank board. The Baltimore Orioles hit the road facing off against the LA Angels. Tyler Anderson is on the bump for the Halos, and Dean Kramer goes for Baltimore. Baltimore, anywhere between minus 122 to minus minus 130 favorites. Anywhere between plus 110 to plus 118 is your number on the Halos. 8-9 is the total. Over is between minus 110 to a minus 125. The under is anywhere between minus 110 to a plus 105. And it's at the Orioles at a minus 116 on the money line. Now that I'm seeing a plus 118 surface, going to be willing to take the Halos here for Tyler Anderson. Has been up, down all around from first few starts of the season. Started out really good. And the big emphasis here for Tyler Anderson has to be on the walks. Because last season, things really went a awry for him when he was giving up north of 3.5 walks per 9 innings. When he had that great year 2 years ago with the LA Dodgers, he was giving out less than 2 walks per 9 innings. And in his last few starts where things have not necessarily been as great, he gave up 5 runs over the course of 11 and 3rd innings against the Red Sox and the Reds. He's back up to 6 walks in those 2 starts. Always has been, always will be a relative pitch to contact guy. So that's something that he needs to be mindful of against a Baltimore Orioles team that right now they're just absolutely shredding the cover off the ball for the Orioles. They right now lead the big leagues with regards to total home runs. And they've got so much depth with their lineup that they're able to platoon for righties and lefties as well. Just take a look at what they had yesterday. If you take out the full Kiersted, who was making his first start of the season, all but 3 players that came up to the plate, if you have him removed, are all hitting at least a 280 for this team. I mean, you've got so much firepower with Gunnar Henderson right now leading the way with 6 home runs, but really it's this entire team. Jordan Westberg, Cedric Mullins, Colton Cowser, Anthony Santander all entered into yesterday with at least 4 home runs. They do a nice job of being able to draw some walks. They just find a way to be able to get on base in general. And for the Orioles, it's been a relatively solid bullpen effort thus far this season, and you might need it with Dean Kramer and the way that he has given up the deep ball here in recent years. Thus far this year, 5 home runs given up in 22 innings. You know that he's going to do a nice job in terms of not giving up a lot of walks. Last year, gave up fewer than 2.5 walks per 9 innings, but was quite lucky on balls in play. Has never really been a swing and miss guy last year. Got 8 strikeouts per 9 innings. Appears as though we are seeing a little bit of regression this year, but we've had so many guys come in out of the bullpen and be rock solid. Dylan Tate, Jacob Webb, these guys have been rock solid. And for Craig Kimbrell, you never know when the bottom's going to fall out on him, but he has been quite effective thus far this season. Still have my trepidations with him, but so far so good. And Junior Cano, one of the better relievers that you're going to find in the big leagues. Meanwhile, for this LA Angels team, you've got a lot of reclamation projects going on. Hunter Strickland, Adam Simber, Jose Cicerano. Out of these 3, only Simber, I think, is going to be able to give you some good innings moving forward. They've been having to trot out their Jose Soriano as now a starter, so that leaves the bullpen even more depleted as they've been looking at Carson Fulmer as their long guy. So far, not too bad for him, but overall, it's an LA Angels team that entered into yesterday 22nd in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. And for the LA Angels, it's just such a top-heavy lineup. Tyler Ward, along with Mike Trout, have been absolutely incredible. You've got both of these guys belting out the bombs. 15 of the team's 23 home runs thus far this season, courtesy of those two guys. And Trout isn't even heading for average. He's actually down to about a 237. That's a career low for him, but he's found a way to be able to move the line. Both of these guys right around about a 320 on base, but it's like of the guys like Mickey Moniak, Aaron Hicks, Zach Neto, Noah Chenal hitting a 210 or lower. That's really killing the team. And I will say Miguel Sano has actually been able to move the line a little bit, but I do think that for Tyler Anderson, he's going to be able to do a solid job, not giving up a lot of walks. And with Dean Kramer giving up the home runs that he is, even though LA is a relatively top-heavy lineup, you've gotten Logan Ohapi, who's been able to move the line. And I do think that the LA Angels do find a way to be able to get to Kramer and do find a way to be able to get the job done. I am willing to take a plus 116 or higher with the Angels on the money line. And this is my total 9.1. I think that we get plenty of scoring here. So I'm going to add the over and the money line of the LA Angels. 967, 968 on the betting board. The Cleveland Guardians play the Boston Red Sox. Cooper Criswell goes for the Sox, and Carlos Cookie Carrasco is on the bump for Cleveland. Cleveland between a minus 133 to a minus 137 favorite, between plus 122 to a plus 125 is your number on Boston. It is the total. Under is minus 115. The over is minus 105. And for the Guardians, set them at a minus 130 on the money line. We're getting very initial numbers right now, so going to be very curious to see how this moves. And if you're looking to lay a run half with the Cleveland Guardians, you're getting between about a plus 150 to a plus 155. If I absolutely had to play it right now, I'd lay a run half for a plus 155 number. But as of right now, I'm trying to see if we can get this down just like 3 or 4 pennies to be able to take the Guardians on the money line. Would be feeling much better about that, because with the Cleveland Guardians, even though this bunch has been very good at being able to move the line, find a way on base, as the Guardians are actually one of your top over teams in baseball thus far this season, there's still not a team that's ripping the cover off the ball in terms of a bunch of home runs. You're getting about 1 home run per game. Josh Naylor has been amazing. 387 on base, 6 home runs. Jose Ramirez, he hasn't necessarily been doing a great job of moving the line. 253 on base, but he's flying 4 home runs, and he's been able to still give you timely hitting, so that's been helpful. You still have Stephen Kwan, who's been really good at being able to find a way on. He and Gabriel Urias are both giving you north of a 295 average, with Kwan up to about a 350. So that's been impressive. And you know that with the Guardians, this team is going to be nails in the bullpen. Top three team in the big leagues with regards to bullpen ERA. All these guys are really coming through for you. Cade Smith, Hunter Gaddis, Tim Herron, really everyone, San Scott Barlow and Tyler Beattie have a sub 3.5 ERA for the team. And then you've got that amazing closer, Emmanuel Clase. The trepidation that you've got is Carlos Cookie Carrasco, someone who had a north of 6 ERA a season ago, and his walks are a big issue. He has been getting a little bit more swing and miss this season than he did a season ago with the Mets, 16 strikeouts and 18 and a third innings, but his walks per 9 rate is hovering right around about 6. He's been able to give up 3 runs or fewer in each of his first 4 starts, but even dating back to that last start against the Boston Red Sox, gave up 3 walks, 4 hits in 5 and 2/3 innings. You have to have some pause with that, though. It is a Red Sox lineup that, in general, they are a little bit banged up as of right now. You've had Rafael Devers deal with injury, and that has really been hampering this team. They are able to get Tyler O'Neill back in the fold, and that's absolutely massive, as he's been able to supply the team with 7 home runs already this season. But it's the young guys. What are you going to be able to get out of them? Because you've got two guys in Jaron Duran, Wilder Abreu, who both have been able to hit north of a 270 for this team. But Sadine Rafaela, Pablo Reyes, Emmanuel Valdez, these are guys hitting below a buck 75. Even the young shortstop and David Hamilton is sitting below the Mendoza line of a 200. And for the Boston Red Sox, bullpen has honestly been halfway decent for this team. Kenley Jansen, Chris Martin, there's a worse 8th and 9th inning duo out there than them. There's far worse than that. Justin Slayton has been able to be a relatively solid long guy. So got a Red Sox team that's right around 15th in the league in terms of bullpen ERA. But now you have to trot out there Cooper Criswell as well, who was coming up in that Tampa Bay Rays organization. Has never been a guy that I necessarily thought was going to be able to blossom. He's a guy that I also don't think is going to completely light the game on fire as well. He's been able to get a few appearances as far this season for the Red Sox, 6 and a third innings in a start and a long relief appearance, only getting about 5.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. He's always been a little bit of a pitcher contact guy. He has given up in this time span 6 runs, but only 3 of which were earned. The Schlubs in the field did not help him out in his last start, but I do think that all in all, the Cleveland Guardians should have a little bit of a leg up here, and I do think that this total is a little bit low. I see some regression coming for Carrasco and Cooper Criswell. He's about as regular of a pitcher as it gets. So here at an 8, I'm going to be looking at the over, and with the Guardians, would rather lay about a minus 130 with them, but if the best I get is a plus 155 run line, I'd be willing to dive in on that as well. 969, 970 on the betting board. The Tampa Bay Rays, they're going to be playing against the Detroit Tigers as Captain Jack Flaherty goes for the Tigers. Tyler Alexander is on the bump for the Rays, and the Rays are between minus 107 to minus 115 favorites, and between minus 105, seeing as high as minus 108, and even money is your number on the Tigers. 8 is the total. Under is between minus 115 to even money. Meanwhile, the over is any between minus 105 to a minus 120, and circumstance where I'm going to be looking at the over, I did set my total at an 8.1. The Detroit Tigers have actually been able to get relatively hot with regards to their bats, scoring at least 4 runs in all but 2 out of their last 8 games, so this has been a nice godsend for them. They still don't necessarily have a ton of power in the lineup. You've been able to have Mark Canna. Yes, he can give you 5 home runs along with Riley Green. Both of these guys were able to crank out the deep ball yesterday. And for Mark Canna, he's really starting to come along. He and Riley Green, for that matter. They're both giving you about a 400 on base. You've got a young gun in Wencel Perez, who's come up to the big league level. He's been able to supply a 300 batting average. But you still have guys that are struggling. Cole Keith has been hitting below the Mendoza line of 200. Zach McKinstry, Javi Baez, Carson Kelly, Parker Meadows. All these guys hitting a 205 or lower, really not giving you a lot of power. But for the Tampa Bay Rays, the top of the fold has not been great for this team. Randy Arozarena, Jose Siri, Yandy Diaz, all hitting a 225 or lower, and all giving you a 275 on base or less. It's been Isak Paredes who's had to do everything. 360 on base, went deep for his 6th home run season yesterday. Ben Rothfitt, who was absolutely terrible with the Yankees last season, he's been able to find a way to be able to move the line. Jose Calabreu, they've signed from the Seattle Mariners, has been able to hit about a 270 as well, but this is a Rays lineup that in general just has not been able to do a great job of being able to get on base, and that's coupled with the fact that this Rays bullpen has been one of the worst out there in the big leagues. It's almost a wonder that they're only a game below 500, considering they entered into yesterday 28th in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. Now, I do think that they're going to be able to find it a little bit more. Pete Fairbanks has a track record of success, just has not been able to find it thus far this season. The former Astros and Chris Savinski, Phil Maton, they've been a little bit rough, and you still have guys like Jason Adam, Garrett Clevenger, who have been able to do their job, but it is a little bit concerning. Meanwhile, for the Detroit Tigers, this is a bullpen that is just stockpiled with guys. They're able to come in and hold down the fort. Number one in the big leagues with regards to bullpen ERA. Jason Foley has been the main closer, but you don't necessarily have that one-star guy. It's just everyone as a collective doing an amazing job, as you've had the likes of Alex Faedo, Cato, Tyler Holton, Alex Lang, Will Vest, all these guys be able to give you a sub-3 ERA. And then for Captain Jack Flaherty, you just don't know what you're going to be able to get out of him on a night-in and night-out basis. One night, it'll be absolutely tremendous. Give up like one run, punch out 10. The next night, it'll just be banged around like a pinata. As far as the season has given up 12 earned runs, 14 in total over the course of 24 and a third innings, and the swing and miss stuff, it is back. 7-plus strikeouts in 3 out of his 4 starts, but when he misses location, he gets hit hard. He's been taken deep in each out of his 4 starts thus far this season, so it's a very interesting circumstance. I did set the Rays at a minus 122 because I do like what I'm seeing out of Tyler Alexander right now. He's been able to come in and he's been able to hold down the fort for the Rays. Now, do note that with Tyler Alexander, there's a chance that they might throw an opener for him, as he has spent some time throughout his career with an opener coming for him. He's also been utilized as just a full-on starter, as this is actually a little bit of a reunion for him. He was pitching with the Detroit Tigers a season ago, and they experimented with him in a lot of different ways, having come out of the bullpen as a guy that was like a bulk guy, a true starter, coming out of the bullpen as a long reliever as well. So this guy has been up, down, all around. And for Tyler Alexander, throughout his career, he's actually been a little bit better when he's been coming out of the bullpen, so would prefer to see an opener be coming in for him, as when he's been a reliever, he's got a 4.05 career ERA compared to a 4.66 ERA as a starter, and his swing and miss stuff, he gets about a strikeout more per 9 innings when he's coming out of the bullpen. But whether he's a starter or a bulk guy, I'm going to be willing to ride with the Rays on the money line. Alexander always does a solid job with command, just whether or not he's going to be able to keep the ball in the yard, giving up 5 home runs in 20 2/3 innings. I think that he does so against the Tigers team that's starting to heat up a little bit with their offense, but still have question marks there. He had an 8 looking at the over, and will delay up to a minus 121 with this Rays money line. 971, 972 on the betting board. The New York Yankees play out to the Oakland A's. Joe Boyle, Low Boyle Rules, is on the bump for Oakland, and Clark Schmidt is on the bump for the Yankees. Yankees do find themselves as favorites of anywhere between minus 210 to a minus 218. Meanwhile, anywhere between plus 180 to, seeing as high as a plus 192, your number on the Oakland A's. 8.5 is the total, under is minus 115, and the over is minus 105. If you're looking to lay a run and a half with the Yankees, you're going to be getting anywhere between even money and minus 105, and I would like to be able to get like plus $2 on the Oakland A's, but as of right now, I'd be willing to take that even money price on the Yankees run line. I recognize that the Oakland A's have been very good at being able to keep games to one run. They did so yesterday, but we'll be looking at that as Joe Boyle, probably your least trustworthy starter right now for the Oakland A's. He's pitched better than his ERA of 7.23 would indicate. I will make that full known. He's given up 20 hits, and it's given up 16 runs, 15 of which have been earned, and he's been very much hurt by the fielding in his first few starts of the season, but that's something that you have to factor in, and he has been loose with the walks. He has given up north of 5 walks per 9 innings, 3-plus walks in 3 of his first 4 starts this season, though. Swing and miss stuff, certainly there. He's been able to get 18 strikeouts in those 18 and 2/3 innings, and goes up against someone in Clark Schmidt who's just been rock solid in general. In his last 30 appearances, he made 1 appearance out of the bullpen. He has given up 3 earned runs or fewer in all but 4 of them. For Clark Schmidt, he's just a little bit more at home when he's at home as well. Dating back to the beginning part of last season, he's got an ERA that's about a half a point higher when he's away from home rather than when he is at home. Has done a nice job of not giving up the deep ball this year. 2 home runs surrendered in 20 innings, and his swing and misses are way up. 23 strikeouts in 20 innings. Now, the trepidation that you've got is that the New York Yankees, once again, have been a little bit rudderless at the plate. Juan Soto has been tremendous. 5 home runs, providing about a .430 on base, but Aaron Judge is really struggling right now. He and Gleyber Torres both hitting below a .190. Both of these guys have not necessarily been able to give you the power that you're expecting as well. Torres giving you 0 home runs, Judge with 3, and then you've got guys like a Giancarlo Stanton who's been able to give you 5 home runs, but he's been an all-or-nothing hitter thus far this season. After great starts of the season, Anthony Volpe as well to Cabrera, they've been cooling down a little bit as well. The problem that you do have with the Oakland A's, though, is that this lineup just is not great, to say the least. They entered into yesterday hitting at .204 as a collective, as right now you've got Seth Brown, Shea Langeliers, Ryan Noda, Zach Aloff, all hitting a .225 or lower. Really, none of these guys are finding a way on base. Lawrence Butler is the only one of their players with north of 50 at-bats that is above a .300 on base. That is a big, giant issue. Now, they get back to Siri Ruiz. Well, I have no idea why he was sent down to the minor league level, but he's been able to give you a .440 on base, one of the best base stealers that you're able to find in the big leagues. But what has been the saving grace for the Oakland A's all season long? The bullpen. A top 8 bullpen in terms of ERA thus far this season. Mason Miller, in my opinion, very much should still be a starter, but He's been really good in that ninth inning role. Danny Jimenez, Michael Kelly, Austin Adams. These are all guys giving you a sub-350 ERA. Meanwhile, for the New York Yankees, bullpen continues to be relatively solid. I like the fact that they get Ron Mananacchio back in the fold. He's been very good for the Yankees the last few seasons, as has Ian Hamilton, though. Ian Hamilton has been acting up a little bit here in the beginning part of the season. Victor Gonzalez, Caleb Ferguson, guys that they picked up from Los Angeles, have been a little bit shaky, though. Gonzalez, he appears to be starting to find it as well. Luke Weaver, as a long guy, is not necessarily the most trustworthy in the world, but neither is this A's lineup that has been towards the bottom of the big leagues with regards to run production. This is a bunch that they're only averaging about 3 runs per contest, so it does make it a little bit of a roll of the dice here to be able to take the Oakland A's, so would need at least plus $2 to be able to do so. So at current numbers, we'll be willing to lay that even money / minus 105 run line price with the New York Yankees, and with regards to Soto, so mine at an 8.4, so here at the 8.5, also going to be diving under to go along with that run line. 973, 974 is an EK Network write-up pick. You've got the Toronto Blue Jays on the road facing off against the Kansas City Royals. Alec Marsh is on the bump for the Royals, and Yuriel Rodriguez on the bump for the Toronto Blue Jays, and with the Blue Jays, you're going to be getting them as a favorite. They're laying anywhere between a minus 115 to a minus 122 price, between even money and plus 107 is that number on the Royals sign as a total, over and under anywhere between minus 105 to a minus 115, and right up here is going to be on the Royals. I set them as the minus 113 favorite. I've really liked what I've seen out of Alec Marsh this far this season. After last year, he was just giving up about 4.7 walks per 9 innings, was giving up the deep ball. He has cut down on the strikeouts. Last year, north of 10 punchouts per 9 innings. That sounded more like 6.7 strikeouts per 9 innings, but that said, he's given up just one home run in 22 and a third innings. He's been able to reduce on the walks as well. Right now, it's a 3.22 ERA and a fielding independent right on par with that, with about a 3.15 coming off of holding the Orioles a 5 2/3 innings scoreless. So that was a very impressive showing from him. Going up against a guy in Rodriguez who, he's a earthly man to say the least. He was pitching out there in the Nippon Baseball League for the Chunichi Dragons at this time last season. He comes over, I believe, from Cuba. So this guy's been up, down, all around in the world pitching, and he's been a nice strikeout artist since getting promoted into the big league level and since being a starter, but he has been giving up the deep ball as well. He has literally given up 2 runs thus far in 7 2/3 innings in his 2 starts, both of them via solo home runs. You have to figure that that's going to catch up with him a little bit. And Rodriguez, he was supposed to be coming out of the bullpen. He was supposed to be a long reliever, and this Blue Jays bullpen entered into the day on Tuesday in the bottom 6 in the big leagues in terms of their ERA. For the Blue Jays, it has been less than terrific for them, though you do have a pair of guys coming back in the fold that should be able to help things out, and Jordan Romano, Eric Swanson, 2 of your better relievers from a season ago, though I will say for Swanson, he's been off to a little bit of a rough start since returning. Guys like a Chad Green, along with Dave Pearson, they've been relatively solid, and Yimi Garcia having a nice career rebirth thus far this season as well, but all in all, it has been rough for this Blue Jays bullpen, and for the Kansas City Royals, they're in the top half of the big leagues in terms of their bullpen ERA. Now, I will say, I do think that it'll be coming back to earth a little bit. Chris Stratton along with Will Smith are not necessarily too trustworthy, and they did have to use up John Schreiber yesterday, but all in all, the Royals have done a nice job of being able to hold down the fort, and it is a Royals lineup that, in general, is a little bit up and down, but for the Royals, they've been able to generate about 5.5 runs per game at home this season, while the Toronto Blue Jays, away from home, they're generating about 3.7 runs per contest. The Blue Jays entered into yesterday's game hitting a 205 as a collective. Away from home went up a little bit, as you've got Justin Turner, who's now giving you north of a 4 on base, hitting above a 300, but he was the only guy, really, other than Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, in the starting lineup yesterday that left the game hitting above a 250. You've also got Kevon Biggio, who pinch hit. He was hitting about a 263, but these guys like Flagaro Jr., George Springer, Davis Schneider, these are all guys hitting between about a 215 to a 220, not necessarily giving you the power numbers that you expect. Been just a rough run of it in general for them. Meanwhile, for the Kansas City Royals, along with Salvador Perez and Bobby Witt Jr., both with 4-plus home runs, both of these guys hitting north of 300, you've been able to have a few guys like Nelson Velasquez be able to step up in a big way. He's been able to give you about a 325 on base. Only a pair of home runs this far this season, but do you think that that's going to be going northward? But on the full, does need to pick it up a little bit. You've got these guys like Michael Massey, Adam Frazier, Darian Blanco, Kyle Isabel, wearing a 220 or lower. Hunter Renfro, it's been a little bit of a disappointment as well, but Vinny Pascantino giving you a 355 on base. That's been big as well for Rodriguez. I think that he's going to be doomed by the fact that he just doesn't lend a lot of length. I could see him giving you four relatively solid innings, but him not being able to lend a lot of length, coupled with the Blue Jays really scuffling at the plate, does lead me to taking the Royals in this spot. My write-up is going to be taking that plus price on the Royals on the money line, and did sell my total 9.2. I do think that there might be a little bit of regression for Marsh, especially with him getting fewer strikeouts than a season ago, but I do think that you're going to get the Royals be able to get into this bullpen and get the job done. I like the over, and my write-up that is on the Royals money line, 975-976 on the betting board. The Minnesota Twins are playing host to the Chicago White Sox. Garrett Crochet is on the bump for the Sox, and Joe Ryan is on the bump for the Minnesota Twins. Twins who find themselves as favorites anywhere between minus 185 to minus 192. Between plus 160 and plus 175, that is your number on the White Sox. 6.5 to 7 NC total. On the 6.5 overs between minus 115 to minus 120, the unders anywhere between even and minus 105. On the 7, unders between minus 115 to minus 130, the overs anywhere between plus 110 and minus 105. I'm going to be willing to take the 6.5 over, so my total is 7.2. I just flat out think that the Minnesota Twins might be doing a lot of this damage all by themselves. For Garrett Crochet, he's pitched better than the 5.61 ERA would indicate, but he's coming off of just getting destroyed by the Philadelphia Phillies, giving up 7 runs in 3 innings. And his first 3 starts were honestly really good, gave up 2 runs or fewer against the Royals, Tigers, and Atlanta Braves. And that Braves start especially was impressive. Now he's just been, in my opinion, probably figured out a little bit, and the walks are starting to creep in. 5 walks allowed in his last 2 starts, spanning 7 2/3 innings, and he needs to be able to reduce on those. Has been able to give you north of 11 punchouts per 9 innings, and he's got sort of the syndrome that you've got with Joe Ryan, even though Joe Ryan does a great job with command. 3 walks in 22 2/3 innings, but when he gets hit hard. Thus far for Ryan, though, he's given up just 2 home runs in 22 2/3 innings, and throughout his career, he's got an ERA about 0.7 points lower when he's at home rather than away from home, though. This year, he's actually struggled a little bit more when he has been in Minnesota. I do think that that is going to be a reversing course, and it certainly will be when you go up against a Chicago White Sox team that, hey, give them credit. They scored 5 runs yesterday, but overall for the season, they're still averaging fewer than 2.3 runs per game. And among guys that got at least 1 at-bat yesterday for the Chicago White Sox, you had 2 guys hitting a .216 or better leaving the game. Eloy Jimenez is starting to pick it up. He's got 2 home runs in his last 5 games, but you just look up and down the boulevard. Andrew Vaughn, Andrew Benintendi, along with Nicky Lopez, David Fletcher, Martin Maldonado, Kevin Pillar, all these guys are hitting at .205 or lower. Not that the Twins have necessarily been a world beater with regards to their offense as well. This team is hardly hitting at the Mendoza line of .200 themselves, but that said, you've been able to get Byron Buxton going. He was able to hit his first home run in the campaign in the 9th inning yesterday to be able to help propel the team to victory. He's been still able to give you about a .250 batting average, though that on base of .275 needs to go northward. Eduard Julian is hitting just a .200, but he's been able to supply 5 home runs. Trevor Larnach, Alex Gerloff, both of these guys have been able to hit above a .270 for the team as well, and Ryan Jeffers starting to give you some good at-bats. And for the Minnesota Twins, this has been a top 8 team in terms of their bullpen ERA. Steven Ohlkert, Cody Funderburk, they've done a nice job holding down the fort while Yoan Duran is currently out of the fold. They get back Caleb Theobaro, was nice last season. Brock Stewart in his 9 appearances has yet to allow runs, so these guys have been pretty spotless. And for the White Sox, if there has been a saving grace for this team, the bullpen honestly hasn't been terrible. I'm not going to go out here and say that it's amazing, and I could certainly see some regression. We saw it yesterday with them blowing that lead, but you got a few guys like a Tanner Banks, a guy that gave up a run yesterday, and Jordan Leisure, along Steven Wilson, be able to supply a sub-330 ERA. Still have guys like Davey Garcia, Dominic Leon, and company that have not been too tremendous, but I do think that the totals went a little bit too low, because at any point, you could see the Twins be able to score 7 runs in this game, and I do think that the Twins are going to be able to have this game on lockdown. I'm willing to lay up to a minus 110 on this run line. Currently, you're getting it as high as plus 125, so going to be willing to lay the run line with the Twins, and here at a 6.5, going to be looking at the over. 977-978 on the betting board. The Walker Texas Rangers plays the Seattle Mariners. Bryce Miller is on the bump for Seattle. 55 Shades of John Gray goes for Texas. Texas back to being a favorite of between minus 110 to a minus 120. Anywhere between even money and plus 107 is your number on Seattle. 9 is the total. Over and under are both at minus 110. And with the Rangers, I'm willing to lay up to a minus 117 with them. So going to be willing to back them with John Gray. The swing and miss stuff over the last, we're going to call it year and a half, it just hasn't been what it was towards the beginning part of his career. And that first little stanza that he had with the Texas Rangers, it was looking relatively good, but you do have to have some fear that he's going to be getting hit relatively hard. Over the last 2 seasons, he's had a fielding independent that's about 0.3 points higher than his actual ERA, and though this season. In his short sample size of 20 innings, he has been able to give you 25 strikeouts. He's also provided 10 walks as well, so that is a little bit of a concern. Has been able to keep the hard contact down, giving up just 2 home runs in this time span. So far, so good. You've got on the flip side a guy in Bryce Miller. He does a nice job in terms of his command. For his career at the big league level, spanning back last year to this year, only giving up about 2.1 walks per 9 innings, but he gets rather hard hit. He has given up 3 home runs already in 24 and a third innings. Despite that, he's got a sub-2 ERA. Fielding dependent is well north of a point higher than this. Now, he has been able to do a better job of just being able to limit the hard contact in general, so that has been a big positive for Bryce Miller, and he's coming along as a young pitcher, and he is backed up by a bullpen of the Seattle Mariners that just continues to be one of the best in the big leagues. I don't know how they do it, but they become the West Coast version of the Rays when they're at full force. These guys like Gabe Spire, Taylor Cicado, Trent Thornton that were left for dead, they have been able to reacclimate them, turn them into nice bullpen pieces. They're trying to do that with Cody Bolton, and he's supplied a sub-3 ERA, even with Matt Brash out of the fold. Andres Munoz has continued to be a tremendous closer, and for the Rangers, the team is still in the bottom half of the big leagues with regards to their bullpen ERA, but you've had Kirby Yates, David Robertson come in, be able to give the team a little bit more stability. I like what I'm seeing out of Jordan Lance right now. He's a relatively solid bullpen piece for the team as well, but I do think that the Rangers, after getting shut out yesterday, they're going to be able to find it with their offense. It's been a little bit of a struggle for Corey Seager. It's been masked by guys like Aaron Judge and company struggling, but just one home run for him thus far this season. Still providing about a 340 on base, but that's been a bit of an issue. Marcus Semien has 4 bombs. He's providing about a 330 on base, and it's really been a dull Garcia, who's carried the team. 360 on base, 6 home runs. A lot of this just stems back to the fact that Josh Jung has been dealing with injury throughout the season, so that's hurt the team a little bit, but 1-9, even though it's not quite as fearsome as it was a season ago, with Wyatt Langford needing to pick it up a little bit. All in all, it has been a solid team, and for the Seattle Mariners, this team is in the bottom half of the big leagues with regards to runs per game, but even if you date it back to last season, they were a much better run-producing team when they were away from home rather than at home. They just need to find someone other than Cal Raleigh to hit the deep ball. Raleigh has been great when deep yesterday. 6 home runs, 350 on base, but you've got a lot of guys who are right now struggling. Ore Polanco, J.P. Crawford, Dylan Moore, Luke Raley, these are all guys in a 215 or lower. Dominic Canzone has been a little bit in and out of the fold. He's on the injured list after he provided a little bit of power. And for Julio Rodriguez, he's found a way to be able to move the line. Just 1 home run from this far this season. Need a little bit more there. Mitch Haniger has found a way to be able to get on base, but I do think that John Gray is going to continue his early season success. I think that he's going to lend a good start against a Seattle Mariners team that has had a tough time being able to generate offense. They haven't been able to score 4-plus runs in now 4 out of their last 5 games, but keep in mind, they just played a series at Coors, so really warp that number. So, circumstance where I'm going to be taking the Rangers on the money line, willing to lay up to a minus 117, and did set my total at 9.4. I think that both of these starters are going to be giving up a lot of contact. So, like the over, and I do like the Rangers on the money line, and wrap things up with 979, 980 on the betting board. The Houston Astros, fifth the road, they're facing off against the Chicago Cubs, as you've got on the bump for the Cubs, Jameson Taillon. Meanwhile, Spencer Arrighetti is on the bump for Houston. Houston is in a rather pick'em game. You're going to be finding them anywhere between about a minus 103, as good as even money, to a minus 110. Meanwhile, with the Chicago Cubs, find them as good as a minus 107, as bad as a minus 115. Right now, only Circa has a total up on this game. It is 7.5. Over and under are both at minus 110. Wind is going to be blowing in this game, and it's going to be blowing in at north of 10 miles per hour, so I did have to drop down my total as well, but I'm going to be willing to go over just because I don't have a lot of faith in either of these pitchers. Arrighetti, which just clearly has not been ready for the big leagues, 5 walks given up in his 7 innings as far as the season, has some nice swing and miss stuff, but you saw it even at the minor leagues as well. His command is still a little bit off kilter, and when he misses badly, so not too tremendous there. Meanwhile, for Jameson Taillon, first start of the season, did not give up any walks, and it's pretty much a classic Jameson Taillon start. He gave up 1 run over the course of 5 innings against the Miami Marlins. He's prone to getting hit relatively hard, but all in all, he's not going to really mislocation too much. He does a solid job in terms of his command. He'll probably give you about 7.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, much like a season ago. And for the Chicago Cubs, the team has really done a nice job of being able to find a way to move the line. And oh, Michael Busch had that streak about a week and a half ago where he had 5 home runs in 5 games. That was absolutely tremendous. And at home, this is a Cubs team that's currently hitting about a 275 as a collective, and they are generating a little bit over 6 runs per contest. You have seen a few guys that have been scuffling a little bit at the plate, and you do have to think that they're going to be able to move the line a little bit better moving forward. Christopher Morel, Ian Happ, Dansby Swanson, these are guys hitting a 245 or lower, and in the case of Happ, he's been able to give you a 360 on base, just 1 home run thus far this season, and after a little bit of a tough start to the season, Cody Bellinger, he's been able to do a solid job of being able to pick up the slack for the team, but but you saw him leave yesterday with a little bit of a back issue. Pierce's x-rays are negative, but I have to think that he's going to be out of the fold for this game. Meanwhile, for the Astros, top of the lineup has been great. Kyle Tucker, Jose Altuve, Yordan Alvarez, all giving you at least five home runs. All these guys at least at 358 on base. Jeremy Pena not hitting for a ton of power, but hitting a 330 with a 357 on base. You're going to take that, but Alex Bregman always struggles to begin the start of the season. 203 average with zero home runs. He has been miserable, but not as bad as Jose Abreu. Jose Abreu, he has just been awful for the team. He's hitting a 065, but past that, it's been a solid lineup. Yennier Diaz has been very good at the catcher spot, but what has really been stunning for the Astros is because they lost guys like Hector Neris, Ryan Stanek, well down the fourth in the bullpen. They did so to bring in Josh Hader. They have really taken a steep fall off because they don't have the bullpen depth that they've had in past years. And right now they're 27th in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. Some of these guys coming in like Sean Dubin are just not giving you good innings. Taylor Scott has honestly been relatively solid for the team, but Josh Hader, he himself has not been too tremendous. Meanwhile, you've got a Cubs bullpen that's about 17th in the league in terms of bullpen ERA. It's been a bad season for Jose Quas. He's currently out of the fold for the team, but the likes of a Luke Little have been relatively solid. Edgar Alzolay, he's been relatively good in the back half of the bullpen. Has had a few hiccups here to begin the season, but all in all, I like him. Hector Neris has done a nice job of being able to hold down the fort, so I do think that the Cubs, they should be a mild favorite here. I'm willing to lay up to a minus 111 with the Cubs on the money line, and with both of these starters having their struggles, going to be looking at the 7.5 over semi-total at 7.8, and that'll wrap things up for the Wednesday edition of the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. A big thanks to our good friend in John Jansen of Fox Sports Philadelphia, the Gambler, for joining me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Baseball Betting Show, you're able to subscribe wherever you hear podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what I have before this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter /XIMeline at GNN_41. Keep in mind, Lursium, name does not matter, so as per usual, please just send these into the timeline. And other ways, find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, that is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Coming at you guys every single day throughout the baseball season. I need some back with you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.